Read and hear more about important news and policy issues at ncpolicywatch.com. This is News and Views with Chris Fitzsimon.
High school graduation rates are up to record highs in North Carolina and around the country and on target to reach 90% in the next 5 years, according to the new report, Building a Grad Nation. The report does find that graduation rates of low-income students are significantly lower in most states, but there are proven strategies to help. Jennifer DePally with Civic Enterprises is a co-author of the report with America's Promise Alliance and joins us now to talk about the findings.
Well, thanks for being with us on News and Views. We appreciate your time.
Thank you very much for having me.
Let's talk about the Grad Nation report. Overall, what should we take away? What are the top line of how we're doing in high school graduation?
So across the nation, we're at an all-time high for high school graduation rates. We hit 81.4%. Last year, we hit 80%. That was a mark that had never been hit before in our nation's history. And we are steadily growing. We're on pace to hit 90% by 2020, which is a goal that was set by my organization along with a few others in the Grad Nation campaign. And so we're making a lot of progress. Really good things are happening. We're seeing graduation rate gaps between student subgroups narrowing, which is extremely positive. Probably the two biggest issues that we're still seeing tend to come from low-income students who are graduating at about a 15 percentage point difference between their middle and high-income peers, and special ed students who are graduating at nearly 20% percentage points behind the national average. So a lot of good news, but still a lot of challenges remain.
I know there's not one answer to this, but what do you and other folks think is primarily responsible for the good news first?
Yeah, it's a very good question. You know, you hear a lot about education reform efforts, and that can entail all kinds of different things. But I think the things that we see that tend to be working the most are sustained efforts. When schools and communities come together and really make this an important issue and find ways to solve it that work for everybody within the school, within the community, within the district, you know, we don't see these, you know, kind of quick, easy answers as being the solution that we're looking for. It really has to be a dedicated effort to raising rates for all of these different types of students from different types of backgrounds. And, you know, we mentioned North Carolina as one of the states that are making great progress, or one of our 10 largest states in terms of cohort size. And, you know, if you look at a state like North Carolina, one of the things that we really like to say is making a big difference is, you know, effective use of data. And that's not, you know, using test scores to assess teachers or things like that. It's using data to really help students and target supports towards those students who really need them. And these are the kinds of things that I think a lot of states are missing the mark on. But when we see positive outcomes, it's because these states are making effective use of data to make intelligent decisions about how best to help students.
It's interesting that across the country, the graduation rate ranges from 90%, as you point out, in Iowa to 69% in Oregon, which is a significant range in states that I think most people would think would both be doing pretty well. Is there a way to account for what seems to be occasionally a wide disparity?
That's something that I think we're going to try to tackle, you know, more head on as we move forward. Where are these big disparities coming from? In some cases, it has to do with, it's not an easy answer, I guess I should say before I launch into this, it's not a really simple answer. You know, some of these states just have different student populations. You know, you look at a state like Oregon and you might think, oh, well, Oregon, you know, they're probably, you know, like you said, somewhat similar to Iowa in types of demographics, but there's a lot of difference there. You've got a lot of rural, very rural areas in Oregon, and not only just rural, but you've got a lot of Native American tribal lands there. And you've got all these different issues that vary across state to state. In addition to that, something that we're really big on trying to fix is the fact that there is such variation between states when it comes to their graduation requirements, what they're determining students need to know and do. Just within the last few years, I would really say within the last decade, you saw this growth of end-of-course exams and exit exams, you know, in order to graduate. And now you're also seeing in the past few years then a lot of states repealing these requirements, which are going to help, obviously, raise their graduation rates. it's really a complicated picture of what is happening. Unfortunately, I don't have a great, you know, perfect answer for you. But there's a lot to do with the fact also, like I said before, that in the states that are leading the way, they are the states that most of the states that are leading the way that are near, you know, the top of this, like you said, Iowa and different states, like I'm trying to think about Tennessee and Pennsylvania and some of these states that are kind of higher on the list, and Wisconsin, they've typically had higher graduation rates throughout history than some of these other states. So they were already kind of at an advantage. They were focused on certain things long before this became a national agenda to raise graduation rates. So like I said, it's a very kind of complicated picture of what's really happening in all these states that, you know, we have this graduation rate measure that helps tremendously in terms of making these cross-state comparisons, but there's also a lot of, you know, kind of sub-factors that make it also difficult to compare across states.
You mentioned there still is a gap in some areas, and one of the ones that I guess continues to trouble a lot of folks about education is this disparity between the achievement of low-income students and students who aren't low-income, and there's still a gap there, and we still see that in North Carolina in a variety of ways, not just graduation. What are some of the things that you've identified? You have a list of policy recommendations, which seem to be, would certainly help that issue, and it's also interesting that you point out Kentucky has adopted a compulsory attendance age to 18.
Yes, and it will be interesting to see how that ends up affecting everything in Kentucky. I mean, they've just adopted that now. The way that they handled it was different than I think other states who have just outright adopted it. They asked that so many districts agree to voluntarily adopt this compulsory school age at 18 before they decided that they would make it a state legislative decision. So it'll be interesting to see if that's it. When it comes to low-income students, though, I think some of the big things that we've talked about is funding and supporting programs and practices that we know are working. You look at, you know, wraparound services is something that, you know, a lot of places are looking into. So bringing more services into the school, you know, getting those community services that aren't necessarily, you know, available to a lot of those low-income students. You know, I think a lot of people would be surprised to know that in some schools across, North Carolina and across the nation, it's not budgeted to have a school nurse within the school, or maybe they're only there a couple of days. And that alone can cause, you know, a tremendous amount of issues, especially when you consider that a lot of low-income students tend to deal with a lot more health issues than middle and high-income students. So, you know, we'd like to see that. You know, we always want to see a raise in school funding, but especially a raise in school funding that directly targets those schools. There's been a lot of studies out, you know, in the past few years, and actually the Department of Education just put something out that said that even with, you know, you've got Title I funds and things like that are supposed to actually be helping these high-poverty schools, a lot of times states are not adequately funding these schools. And so those Title I funds are basically helping those schools break even. And they should be there to help raise those schools above other schools because those students need it the most. We talk about a lot of different things, making health and wellness initiatives part of the school, trying to really level the playing field for these students that have the most challenges to face.
Well, we really appreciate you doing the report. It's interesting, and it's nice to have some good news, and we appreciate you being with us. Thanks for your time.
It is. Thank you so much.
Up next, the role that charters are playing in the resegregation of our schools. Stay with us.